Thursday, the 17th of November, 2022. History descends upon TW2. Heroes of the past returned for a final date with destiny. Stars of the future laying down their markers. Old foes and new enemies stand together on the hallowed turf of the stoop, bound for Elysium. Our great leader spoke of these men. He spoke of a team whose fundamental existence is to excite and entertain against the barbarians. Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Welcome back to another episode of Two Woods, Four Quarters, a Harlequins podcast. My name is Michael and I'm sat, as always, with my cousin Will. It's been a few weeks, mate. It feels like a long time. How have you been?
I've been all right. I've been very busy. I've been slightly ill this week with a little bit of a common cold that seems to be going around. So if I'm coughing or sniffly during this episode, please forgive me. I'll try not to do it in the microphone. But apart from that, I'm good. The rugby's been great. We've had a beautiful Thursday night at the Stoop. Fireworks, light shows, scintillating rugby. We've had a disappointing Friday night game in the Prem Cup against Sale. We've then had a thrilling encounter at Twickenham. And then prior to all of this, we've had the Women's World Cup final. We've had announcements of departures. We've had rumours of incomings. So this is going to be a jam-packed episode, and I can't wait to get stuck in.
Feels a bit like the one we did a couple of weeks ago where we're all starting with lots and lots of news, but...
That was a good episode, though. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, it was good.
Give me more.
I don't even know where to begin with this. There's so much. We've got, like you said, we've got Ultimate Internationals, Women's World Cup. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Barbarians as well. Plus, we're going to have a little look at Gloucester. But we will start with a little bit of news, more sort of squad-based to kick off. Obviously, in the last week or so, the news has come out that Joe Marchant is going to be leaving us at the end of the season. There were some things circulating on Twitter that maybe this was going to happen. Sometimes you see those articles, those clips, and you think, okay, maybe there's just a bit going on and it's just, you know, classic rumour mill stuff. But obviously, sometimes they do turn out to be true. So we are going to lose Joe. We don't know where yet, not confirmed, but obviously there's a strong link towards somewhere in Paris, Stade Francais being the next destination for him. What are your thoughts, mate?
Oh, it's a painful one, isn't it? It's especially painful because following this team over the years, it feels like we're hitting a bit of a peak right now. I would argue our squad over the past two seasons has probably been the strongest I've ever seen it across the board in particular. And the depth as well has been as strong as it's ever been. And March has just been incremental in everything that we've achieved in the last, well, as long as he's been at the club, really. So he's just such a good player. He's a world-class 13. How he doesn't get a look in with Eddie, I'm not quite sure how. But I'm more than happy to have him wearing the quarters every single week. You saw how good he was for the Barbarians. You saw how good he was against the Barbarians. We see it every week in the Premiership. I'm just devastated to see him go. He's proved his weight in gold recently as well when we've had a few injuries and he can be versatile and cover the wings, which he's done quite a lot in the Premiership. 13 is obviously his bread and butter. Getting him involved in the game is when we're at our most deadly and our most threatening. So to lose that is going to be a shame. I've come to terms with it, though, I must say. It's been a while since the news came out, and obviously we've not recorded a podcast since then. So I've had time to reflect and dwell on it. And I do look at our squad and think we've got Luke Northmore, who's more than ready. He'll probably be licking his lips at the thought of playing 80 minutes most weeks. He has become a little bit accustomed to a few injuries, which does concern me slightly. But we've also got the emergence of Oscar Beard, who, again, has broken onto the scene on the wing, but is by trade 13. So it'd be interesting to see him if he gets a few more minutes in that position. I think what I'm trying to say is, whilst he is no doubt a world-class player and part of the fabric at Quins and part of this golden generation that followed from the previous era of Robshaw, Kerr and Marlowe, you then had the era of Smith and Marchant and Dombrandt and Murley, etc. That kind of group, so to speak. I know they're slightly different in ages, but this generation of Quins, he's been right up there in terms of one of our most important players. And I feel like whilst he's a massive loss, we've got players coming through that can fill that. I wouldn't want to see us replace him. I don't think we need to replace him, which is bizarre when you think about the quality of March, and I would argue he is irreplaceable. But we've got players that can step up.
He has been involved in everything good that we have done over the last 2 or 3 years. You know, from that try in the corner at Bristol that sends us to the final, the commentary.
Oh, wait, can I hijack this podcast? I know you're leading this week, but I've got a game that I want to play with you. And it's just made me think, because a lot of my answers are actually Joe Marchant. So one of the games was top five Quinns tries. What are your top five Quinns tries? Now, this might take a little while, so I'll tell you right now, in my top five, I've got two from Joe Marchant. This is all-time Quinns tries I've ever seen. There's two from Joe Marchant in there. One of them is Montpellier, of course, 2022. Last 16 of the Champions Cup. Danny Kerr flings it in field. Marcus Smith makes the break.
Yeah.
Merley in support gives it to March to finish the job. Speaking of finishing the job, Marchant, Bristol, 2021. Premiership semi-final away at Ashton Gate. One of the best feelings I've ever had watching a rugby game. And I wasn't even in the ground. I was watching it on TV. Just one of the best feelings I've ever had. An unbelievable try to finish the game as well. Yeah, two of Joe Marchant's tries feature in my top five Quinns tries of all time. And I don't think many people can dispute that.
The miracle of Bristol. But yeah, obviously just sort of sticking with Joe. When it came out that Wilco was leaving, it felt like, right, that's an area of the pitch we need to replace immediately. With Collier's injury, you know, that's somewhere that we will be looking to strengthen in, you know, the summer, whenever that sort of rolls around. But it feels like with Joe, like you are right, he is almost irreplaceable. He's been part of everything that we've done well in the last 2 or 3 years, either on the wing or at 13. But we have got guys that can fill those shoes. You know, Luke Northmore is now a premiership-ready outside centre. Beard, etc. Lennox might start playing at 13 if Andre's going to play loads of rugby. But you can't begrudge Joe for what he's going to be doing. You know, I think it's probably been made clear to him that Eddie doesn't have him as part of his World Cup plans, or maybe doesn't see him in the England window. So look, if he's going to go to France, which seems like the likely destination, then he's going to go there for 2, 3, 4 years. Make a shed load of cash. Obviously, that's not the reason he's going to be living in, you know, some pretty cool places. Obviously, we went to Montpellier last year and you could see why the likes of Zach Mercer go out there and play. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to say no to that opportunity. But yeah, it'll be desperately disappointing to see him leave. He's been so good for us over such a long period of time. He's been just in everything we've done well. He's been in Premiership finals, you know, European games, on the wing at 13, amazing tries, the speed, the versatility. I love him. And I know that there are a lot of Quinns fans out there. I know that Joe Bracher, who runs the Rugby Quinns account, he says that Joe Marchant is probably his favourite player at Quinns, maybe of all time, definitely sort of currently. But yeah, it'll be desperately disappointing to see him go.
I think if there was one player that you had to pick to summarise Harlequins, it would probably be him. His pace, his agility, his athleticism. I think about the kickoffs we do where he goes up and competes in the air, the basketball style, keeping it on the pitch one-handed. I remember the way he set up Hugh Jones's try away at Northampton last season, which was freakish. He's got this freakish ability to do this unbelievable athletic skills, I suppose, at the most impossible times as well. Some of the tries he scored, keeping it in field. That's what we'll miss the most. I know Luke Northmore's an established 13 that can do all of the standard things that 13 can do, the same as Marchant can, but Marchant's got that skill set that is just a freakish athlete ability to put him above the rest. I think that's what we'll miss the most, is just that top, that extra 5%, I would say, of skills that are almost uncoachable.
I know you just spent the weekend in Munich watching the NFL, but do you remember his quarterback style pass
a couple of years ago.
There was no one in the ground to see that during COVID. Picks the ball up.
No one else can do that.
He's a bit of a freak athlete, but yeah, desperately disappointed to see him go. Hopefully it's a brilliant end to this season, potentially into his Quinns career. We'll see what happens. Someone that's Quinns career might just be starting in the summer of, well, towards the end of the summer of this season. There's more rumours circulating around Joe Launchbury. Looks like he's going to be off to Japan for the remainder of this season. And then it looks like, or the rumours are, if we're led to believe them, that he might be starting with us at the start of the 23-24 season. We've spoken about him. Obviously, Steph's got a bit of a long-term injury that still needs attention. But just adding Launchbury into that second row mix suddenly gives us loads of depth in that area of the pitch. And actually, from where we looked at the end of this season, or the end of last season, I should say, losing Tiz and Simo, to then having Dino playing more rugby after his injury, G-Ham, Ernie's been a brilliant addition. Hopefully, Steph gets fully fit. Throw Launchbury in the mix. That's a pretty good crop of second rowers.
G-Ham? The people actually call him G-Ham?
G-Ham, yeah.
No, yeah. I don't buy that. I don't believe that.
Yeah,
G-Ham. Who calls him G-Ham? Just you?
I think D-Rog might have done D-Rog, G-Ham, same sort of crossover.
Right, well, I'm not letting that catch on. Anyway, Launchbury, it looks fairly clear cut, doesn't it? Lots of high-profile, respected journalists reporting on it. All it's lacking is an official statement from the club or from Launchbury himself. So I'm fairly confident that one's going to happen. It would have been great for it to have happened this season. I think him coming in this season, when our line out is probably one of our biggest weaknesses in all of our gameplay, that would have been critical to fixing that. And he would have gone a long way to helping solve that. And that probably is the kind of difference between winning and losing a Premiership final, right? Is those brilliant basics of just nailing your line outs. And I'd have thought if we had Launchbury, say we're going into a Premiership final with or without Launchbury, I would be incredibly confident going into that Premiership final if we had Launchbury, whilst still having Wilco Lowe at tight head and having March at 13. My word, that would have been a hell of a squad. Yeah. But as you say, our second row stable now is enviable from other Premiership clubs in the league. I think it's as good as I've ever seen it. I also think that of all the areas we had to strengthen, second row with this world beater in Launchbury, it's probably quite a good solution to losing the world beaters in Wilco and Marchant. I think our back line is just mustard. Everything about it is great. You've still got Marcus. You've still got Andre. You've got Danny, Caden. You've got Lewis Lynott that will be back for next year. You've got Josh Bassett now. Tyron Green will be back. I'm not worried. And also with Luke Morphmore filling in and Oscar Bid developing, I'm not so worried about that. Whereas the front row, I'm a little bit worried about Wilco. Collier's obviously injured at the moment and he'll be back next season, but there's a lack of depth there now, I think, that needs replacing. But then just to have that extra international quality British and Irish Lion in your pack, that's you can't put a price tag on that. So I think overall as a piece of business, talk about the three players there, the incomings and outgoings, I would only want to see us replacing Wilco Lowe now. I think Launchbury adds great value to that pack. I think our backs speak for themselves. It's just tight head. Our set piece has been pivotal for providing us with a platform for our backs. We can't let that slide. We need to make sure we maintain that. And I don't know where you find one of those from, but whoever they are, if they've got Launchbury behind them, I'm sure they're going to be good.
Yeah, I think you're right. And there was also a rumour I saw on Twitter almost 2-3 weeks ago now that Danny might be signing another 1-year contract. So that's good news if that happens.
Yeah, I saw that.
We're talking, 100%, yeah. I mean, we're talking, you know, we're almost looking too far past this season at the minute with all this stuff, but it's obviously worth talking about. Let's look slightly into the past couple of weeks back now. The culmination of an amazing World Cup in New Zealand. Obviously, the timings of the games are difficult to watch. The patch was packing out, 6 a.m. finals.
That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it was wicked, but it's tough to talk about the final. And I was actually working on the morning, so I only watched about the first 40 minutes, then I had to start teaching, and I literally caught the last 5 minutes, but I've watched the highlights since. It almost feels too long ago now to talk about the game in any great detail, but, you know, heartbreaking, so heartbreaking. And obviously, nobody will feel more devastated than Lydia Thompson getting sent off in the 18th minute, and we end up losing by 3 points. I don't think it's too far-fetched at all to say that if we keep 15 players on the pitch, we end up winning the game, World Cup final. She'll feel
potentially,
absolutely,
you never know.
Of course you don't. Of course you don't. But she'll feel as devastated as anybody. But I mean, just the last 2 minutes that I remember, we've absolutely annihilated New Zealand at line out time, rolling ball with 3 points down with a kick to the corner. Amy Kincaid's already scored 3 tries in the final, a hat trick in the World Cup final. That's pretty special. Wow. Ellie Kildon's also scored in the final. We've got two Quins, you know, from our women's program scoring in World Cup finals. They steal the ball from the line out. It goes off, and you know, New Zealand end up taking the trophy. But just
it was
watching
almost scripted for them, though, wasn't it?
It was
scripted.
It really was.
An unbelievable winning streak for the Red Roses. I think it was, what, 30 games in the end?
Yeah.
Well, not quite 30 as it turned out, but it was almost scripted that this phenomenal winning streak, which is almost unheard of in sport, would come to an end, not only in a World Cup final, but against New Zealand on their home turf for them to win the World Cup. It was almost scripted that it was going to end that way. But with that said, what a contest. What an advert for women's rugby as well. I thought it was an incredible game. Some controversial decisions, as there are in sport, we won't dwell on them. It won't change the result, but they can hold their heads high. They've been phenomenal for the last 2 years, probably more than 2 years, let's be honest. But for it to culminate in a final where they were just oh so close will hurt. And Simon Middleton said they'll never get over it. And it's the sad truth that these kind of things never really leave you. All I'll say is that it will motivate them going forwards. I hope our players come back with a bit between the teeth and go and prove a point that they're going to win a trophy with Quins this season. So I'm gutted for them. They're obviously gutted. We're incredibly proud of them at our club as well. Shauna Brown, Ellie Kildon, Vicky Cornborough, Amy Cocaine, Rosie Gallagher, Lucy Packer. What an effort.
Yeah.
Can't wait to have you back with us. Let's go out there, do a shift in the Premier 15s and get that trophy for you.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're looking forward to watching them play. The Allianz is kicking off this weekend, so obviously they'll have a little bit of time off, get some rest and recovery in after a bruising campaign. The six women that we had in our squad, you know, will be over the moon to see them back at Quins, and they're going to come back, you know, heroes, and just desperately disappointed they didn't quite get over the line.
We've also just signed Bryony Cleal from Wasps, so that just adds further world-class depth to our front row, which is looking pretty scary at the moment. So talk about strength and depth. We've got international stars all over the park. And looking at where we are now going into the new season, where we just lost Breach and Beckett, and we were thinking, okay, this is looking tough. Actually, we've just brought in a hell of a lot of experience, and Rachel Burford named captain again this year. Could this be her swan song? Could she be going out lifting the trophy once again? We can only hope.
Yeah. Should we talk about Autumn Internationals briefly before we jump on the bar bars?
Yeah, let's do it.
So I've actually, for the first time in a long time, been to a couple of the games this year. I don't often get into Twickenham for a few reasons. But I woke up on Sunday the 6th against Argentina. Jumped on Twitter, had a little lookout, had a DM from one of the fans of the podcast, Mike, who offered me a ticket. And I went and sat with him and his mate all afternoon, and it was brilliant.
Oh, great.
It was, unfortunately, we obviously didn't manage to win, and it was a little bit of a slow game, lots of penalties. We didn't play particularly well. I just thought Argentina were excellent. But we had a really, really good afternoon, plenty of pints, and it was a really good day. My first trip to watch England at Twickenham for a long, long time. So I've obviously jumped on text to you between now and then. But if you're listening, thanks so much for the ticket. Hopefully I can repay you with a few more beers soon. And then I actually ended up going to New Zealand yesterday as well. Which was pretty special, a little bit more of an exciting team picked by Eddie Jones. Not much to say about the first 60 minutes. It was a bit slow. There's a few players in the side that I think maybe it's done in the international window. But the last 10 minutes was pretty special. Marcus finally got a little bit more time and space to play with the ball. And we ended up taking the draw. He was getting a bit of stick on social media, etc., for kicking the ball out, and some people writing some pretty tasty things, which I don't really agree with. But yeah, it was a pretty cool day yesterday, actually. The light show was pretty good. The atmosphere actually at Twickenham that I hadn't experienced before, other than for a big game, I thought was excellent. The crowd were up for it, especially in the last 10 minutes when we started getting more of the ball and started playing a little bit more rugby. We've got one more big contest against South Africa next week. How have you seen this little period of internationals? My biggest feeling of it is that I'm gutted that Caden hasn't been involved. I'm surprised that Dombrandt hasn't been called up to the squad at some point. Maybe that will happen in the South Africa week, who knows. But what are your overriding thoughts over the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks of international rugby?
I hope Dombrandt doesn't get called up just for one game to get beaten up by some South Africans ruined by Eddie. Quite happy for him to stay with us and play against Gloucester. But anyway, I've felt more disconnected from the England rugby team this autumn series than I think I ever have in my 26 years of life, which is sad thing to say, because our main man, the magician, the wand chooses the wizard, Marcus Smith at 10, set the world alight for the last 20 at the weekend. So aside from those 20 minutes, I've not really enjoyed any of it. I was at the Argentina game. Tale of two halves, really, for me. Not necessarily in terms of on the pitch, but torrential rain, cold, miserable, crappy game. But then the rain stops and I was in the fan zone with music, band on stage, plenty of Guinness, taking part in a few of the little games they've got up there. Really good fan experience, actually. So the best part of that day for me was off-field as opposed to on-field. Japan, didn't watch it. Last weekend was in Munich working. Foregone conclusion. Not much to say on that. And then the All Blacks. Didn't really know how to read this one because they're not great at the moment either. And Eddie was quite right in the build-up. They're there for the taking. Certainly didn't look like we were trying to take them for the first 60 minutes, which is massively disappointing. He still doesn't know what his best bat line is. Still doesn't know what his best pack is. Can't figure out his back row. Yeah, just a real shame. It's not something I enjoy watching. The atmosphere at Twickenham isn't what it used to be. I don't like singing Swing Low Sweet Chariot anymore now that I'm educated and where it came from and what it means. There's no real songs. It's just not comparable to a Stoop match day where the rugby is scintillating. The fan zones are great as well, but also the fireworks, the light displays. I know they had that at Twickenham yesterday, but we have songs that go on. We've got a drum in the South that it just can't compare. And I've never wanted to be that guy that's club over country. I always, always put country first. I always love backing the country, but I just don't enjoy it. And I'm at a point now in my life where I'm like, if I'm not enjoying it, what are we doing it for? So it's such a shame because we've got arguably the best squad we've had in such a long time and we're just not doing anything with it. And it frustrates me. And it got to the point where I actually tweeted the other week and I slightly regret it. I tweeted the other week, look, under Eddie Jones, we're not going to play a Quinn style of rugby. It doesn't suit Marcus Smith. It's killing him. It's killing him. He's getting slaughtered. It's changing the way he plays for the worse. We should start with Farrell at 10, Tuilagi at 12 and Slade at 13. And then you've got your bolters on the bench, your Danny and Kerr 21, Smith 22, coming on, injecting some pace, attacking game, switch up the style of play, finish the job, or create a turnaround, as they do for Quinn so often. And that's how I kind of saw it. But in those last 20 minutes, when Eddie moves Smith to first receiver and he sets the world alight and tears the All Blacks apart, why are we not just doing that anyway?
Yeah. Oh, I know what you mean, and I think maybe it's actually because I've actually been to a couple of the games in this autumn series. I have felt a little bit more connected with it. Usually when England play, unless it's sort of Six Nations time, I know the summer in Australia was a difficult one to watch at times due to sort of timings and other things going on. I have felt a little bit more connected with it this year, but only because I've been going. I just can't work out what the goal is in these autumn series. I see people saying, you know, oh, there's definitely, we're holding something back for the World Cup. You know, look at the way we played in the last season. We're definitely holding something back. We're trying all this stuff. And I understand that. And maybe we'll see a real step up in quality and a real sort of more assured starting side bench. We'll see more accuracy in terms of actually what we think we want to do, what the back row will look like, who's going to play in the second row, who's going to play sort of 10, 12, 13. Maybe we'll see that in the Six Nations as the World Cup does sort of gear up and get closer. I am sort of a little bit bored of the narrative of, oh, it's all about the World Cup, it's all about the World Cup. You know, we're not just playing. These aren't friendlies. International rugby doesn't have friendlies. You want to watch your best side. You want to try and win every game. Everything isn't about a 6-8-week World Cup. We can't go in four-year cycles the whole time. And that's where I get a little bit frustrated with it. But I did enjoy yesterday. I think, and this is just my own opinion, I'm sure people will slaughter me for it, I think Billy V's time at international level is done. I think he looked like a bit of a cart horse yesterday. Just there's no pace to him. You see that, you know, he's playing at Survey, who's probably at this stage the best player in the world, potentially. I just don't see it anymore. I actually thought Youngs was okay yesterday when he came on. Jack Van Porfleet didn't play brilliantly, but I like what he's doing. I like the way he tries to play. I think it's more exciting to watch. The Marcus Farrell debate, we could go on for hours, and people have got thousands of different opinions. I think Manu, 2012 is when he had that amazing game when we beat New Zealand. 10 years ago. Since
wow.
How mental is that? He's a different player than he was 10 years ago. Are we still clinging on to this Manu? Is he the be-all and end-all that we've got in that midfield? I don't think so. I think you could play with I think you could play with Slade at 13 if you had, you know, Simmons in the back row somewhere with some ball carries and with some dynamism. I don't know. We could talk about it for hours, but I think fundamentally I agree with you in the Harlequins comparison. I do not enjoy going to watch it as much as I enjoy being at the Stoop. Having the connection with the players, having the connection with the fans, the connection with the points on the line every weekend. You know, we're playing competitive rugby. We're watching our boys try and get four or five points every weekend. And I've missed it in the last 2 or 3 weeks. I really have. And that's why I'm really looking forward to Gloucester on Friday night in a week's time. You know, we'll see
what a fixture that is, by the way.
It's going to be brilliant. I'm really looking forward to it. So look, we'll park the England stuff there. We will talk about the main event. Now, again, this isn't points on the line rugby.
Are you not entertained?
This isn't points on the line rugby, but this was historic. It was so, so good. We won't talk about the game in any great detail because if we're going to try and pinpoint and sort of critique and analyse every try that was scored, we'll be here till, you know, Friday when we're meant to be playing Gloucester. Give us a sense of your thoughts on the night. Obviously, we had Brandy returning. We had, you know, Caden fast track back into the 23. We had a pretty good side, actually. It's a side you wouldn't be, you know, upset or ashamed about walking out against Gloucester on Friday night. But gives a sense of what you felt on the night.
Yeah, piece of history. We're etched in history now. The players are etched in history. I particularly liked how they all had embroidery on their shirts, name, fixture, date. I think it's something that they'll frame and cherish, and quite rightly. I went and bought a program, which is something I don't normally do. A beautiful program this week as well. It was almost like it was not binded. I don't know how to describe it. I'm not a book nerd, but I don't know if you can tell. But it was a different kind of program. It wasn't kind of the cheap plasticky ones. It was beautiful, and
it was almost like a sort of hologram on the front, wasn't it?
Hologram. You had Marla half and half, Barbars and Quins. A beautiful program. I had to buy it just for the memorabilia, but yeah, historic match day and one that came about in sad circumstances, but something that was incredibly important to the club, but not just the club, the fans as well, and how the fans are craving these match days. And Thursday night was a bit of an experiment, and I might be controversial here, but I don't think Thursday night fixtures are the answer. After all, a couple of podcasts ago, I said this could be the future. Rugby League did it for a little bit. You get kind of Champions League nights midweek on a Tuesday, Wednesday. It didn't quite work for me because I didn't finish work till 6 o'clock. I didn't really have mental capacity to think about the games, to get excited. And as soon as 6 o'clock hits, my first thought is, how am I going to get there from central London? Figured all of that out, got to the ground, had my bag with me. It was all a little bit, not rushed, but it was just a bit of an uncomfortable and not optimal match day for me, which is partially why I think Thursdays aren't the answer. Didn't have too many beers as well. Busy time at work at the moment, so Friday wasn't really a day where I could sort of go through the day. So for me, I don't think Thursdays are the answer. Nighttime games, I think, are. Friday night at Gloucester will be great next week. It'll be a similar kind of experience, I'm sure, where I've got to rush from work, probably take a bag, but at least I can put back a few more pints and get excited about the weekend a little bit more. But for me, just a brilliant match day. It was so good to see the likes of Damian McKenzie playing for them.
Yeah.
Mike Brown captaining the side, scoring his try.
Barbar's capped inside. No sign of a turnover, so they go again. McKenzie off the left boot. Oh, what a kick! Mike Brown! He is swamped by the Barbars. What a kick, what a line, what a finish, what a moment for a Harlequins great.
Linking up with McKenzie as well, which is just quite a cool thing to see. We put out a pretty stacked team, bar the odd few players who some were in the Prem Cup game the next day, like Lorday. I'm sure he'd have loved to have been involved with the Barbars. He'll probably be quite disappointed with that. But yeah, fairly stacked team, good levels of rotation. I quite liked how Will Edwards played. God, he's a good player. Probably the best third choice 10 in the league, right? He's got all the attacking abilities of Marcus Smith. And my biggest doubt about him was his kicking. I thought he kicked brilliantly. Really, really well. So I'm full of courage for him going into Friday. And it was on his birthday as well. Managed to score a try. Just so many positives out of the day. I know Dave Rogers had the best day ever, didn't he? You want to tell the story about Dave doing Quins Live before the game?
So, well, there's a few stories I've got to tell actually here, because there were some couple of quite cool things happened to me actually, given the fact that you were you know, rushing over from work, I was able to get in the ground a little bit earlier and do some quite cool stuff in the club, which I'll tell you about in a second. But yeah, D-Rog on Quinn's Live. Luke Northmore and Scott Robertson were booked, they were listed, they were coming in. And then out of nowhere, Brownie walks up on stage, full boots on, Harlequin's 2012 Cougar on his left foot and his Salisbury RFC on his right foot. That was quite a cool little touch. And he had a really good chat before the game, taking some digs at Danny and having a real good laugh in the North Stand bar. D-Rose then whizzes over into his commentary position and does the Quins Live on YouTube, and it was also on TikTok. So I know my dad watched it at home on YouTube, which is pretty cool.
What do you mean he's not on TikTok?
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm not sure he's quite hit the TikTok trend yet, my old man, bless him. Still loves a Facebook update.
Does he know what TikTok is?
I don't think so, even if I asked him. But Dave had a pretty sick night, so we're buzzing for him. I actually had some pretty cool experiences as well.
Yeah, you did. You did. Go on. Fill us
in. So for this match only, Harlequins were partnered with a new tech company, sort of phones and watches, called Xiaomi, I think was the correct pronunciation in the end. So I got a text from Ali, who works for the club, and he said, do you want to come and sort of help us out with some promo stuff? And I said, yeah, go on then. What's the crack? So I get in and they link me up with a little smart watch, and they're going to do some content for heart rate during the game and measure somebody that works within the staff of the club, a coach and a fan. So they had Laurie watched up, they had Tabby watched up, and myself.
Well, you're in good company there, aren't you?
I know. So I went and got watched up before the game, had a quick chat with Laurie. He has a pretty good little mo going on, actually, for Movember. Mine is pretty pathetic. I've got sort of whispering.
I didn't even know you were doing it.
You can't really
it's
see
the 20th
it.
20th of November.
I know. You can't really see it through the camera. It only catches.
Oh, yeah, it's the camera, right?
It only catches in the light. I've been trying to get on.
Have you got your phone there?
Yeah.
Go and get the torch on. Let's have a look.
Well, I've been trying to get it on Be Real. It's difficult to actually get any light where it catches. Trying to get the old Movember stuff on it, but.
No, that's not helped.
No, it's not.
It is a great clip out. Can't wait to post this on social.
Can't see crap. But yes, that was pretty cool. So I got teched up, sat in my seat. We had a good time measuring the heart rate throughout the game. Then when he gave the watch back. So hopefully there'll be some content coming out in a couple of weeks. You might see my heart rate. I was quite fortunate, actually, because Ali knew how tall I was. He said, oh, you're 6'5". I had to put your height and your weight in just to make sure that the metrics would sort of match up. He said, I knew you were 6'5". And I sort of guessed you at about 90 kilos, which is quite kind of him. I'm operating at about 95 at the minute. I've got a few to lose, but with Christmas coming up, that's probably not going to happen. So that was pretty cool. Hopefully the content comes out in the next week or so. And then I also got the chance to do an interview with BBC Radio London, which was quite quick.
Yeah, this
quick.
Is cool.
Sort of came about really, really quickly. Wasn't quite sure sort of how that was all going to happen, but I ended up speaking to a chap called Phil, whose surname I forget, and also Mark Church on BBC Radio London. My dad actually recognised him, does a lot of cricket, does a lot of work for pancreatic cancer as well. So hopefully we can connect with those guys again and do some stuff on radio again, which would be pretty sweet. Had a good chat about the pod. So if anyone actually listened to it, I've not been able to find the clip or the link online on the soundbites or BBC Sounds or anything like that. So if anyone did listen to it or has clipped it,
you should ask them. They'll have a clip up somewhere.
I'm trying to DM one of them, but I can't find them on Twitter. I can't find a way to message them. But we'll try and get that sorted. But that was pretty cool. But yeah, the whole night, I think, after sort of doing that stuff at the start of the game, obviously a really good experience for me and obviously great for the pod, but it was good.
What was the gist of the radio chat?
Well, they asked about the pod. They asked about what the fixture meant. They asked about some of the players, how the season goes and sort of the general sort of feeling about it. But they were really interested in the podcast, which was quite cool. I wasn't expecting that.
How do you think the season's going as we sort of come out of this mini break now?
Well, it was almost sort of connected to the game, you know, the Barbarians fixture and how the game has panned out to this stage and what this fixture means going forward. And I sort of said, well, you know, we're in a bit of a funny period at the minute. We're 2 weeks without a game in the league. The international period's kicking off. And we're in a good place at the minute. Obviously, we were slightly further down the table, but then the Worcester and Wasps results got scratched. We're end up now, I think, third or fourth. Gloucester are looking good. We've got them next week. But this is a chance for us to go out on a Thursday night in a really historic fixture against the Barbarians and see what we're about. Maybe try a few different connections, give guys like Will Edwards a chance at 10, see more rugby from Josh Bassett, you know, those sort of players.
Got his try, didn't he?
Yeah, and just express yourself. You know, you're going to be playing against a team that are going to throw the ball around whatever happens. We do that more often than not anyway. It was a little bit slow to start with. Obviously, sometimes it was even one, two, three passes too many. But actually, we ran in some pretty great tries towards the end. Obviously, Hayden Hyde had that length of the field try, and it was quite funny watching Brownie and Caden, you know, nipping his heels all the way, having a bit of a chat and a laugh. Caden comes on with about 25 minutes to go and gets a couple of tries. But they were asking just about the way the game was and the way the things panned out beforehand. And I just said, this is a brilliant opportunity for us to put bums on seats and, you know, fill the stoop on a Thursday night and enjoy it and enjoy what Quinns is about. And there's no better team in the league than the Barbarians to do that against. And one of the final things I said is that, you know, without having those special Quinns tinted glasses on that we get, you know, discredited for quite a lot of the time, we are the envy of the league being able to do something like that. Nobody can bill a fixture against the Barbarians with the Premiership side as a match for the entertainers, you know, a contest of fun and excitement. No other team in the country can bill it as that other than us. So we're unbelievably lucky to have it. Seeing Brownie back was brilliant. Seeing him and Danny sort of go toe-to-toe, there's a few scuffles. Joe Marler towards the end coming on with his full tights on and his white socks with Ewan on and the names of his kids, which he wore at Spurs Stadium the week or so before. Doing gooseys in the corner, drop kicking conversions. It was all so much fun. And obviously we ended up running in about 70 odd points. Second half became a little bit one-sided when DMAC came off and Brownie came off, but it was brilliant, mate. And I'm so glad that they did it. I'm so glad it panned out brilliantly. Everyone seemed to have fun. The Robshaw bar was packed after the game. Plenty going on in there as well. So if Thursday night rugby isn't the way forward, we'll see. But if we can do more stuff like that, there's no other club in the country that would be able to do anything similar or bill it as anything more fun and entertaining. And, you know, for the fans, no one can do that. We're the only club that can put that on. Big game, that sort of thing. You know, we're the only club in the country that can sort of put these events on. And we're so lucky that everything sort of panned out the way we wanted to. Moving on from what a brilliant night Thursday was, let's have a very, very, very quick look at Gloucester. They're tracking well this year, the Cherry and Whites. They've made King's Home into a bit of a fortress. They haven't lost there yet this season, I don't think. They're tracking well. They are going to be missing a couple of internationals. I don't know if they'll have Rhys Sammet back. I'm not sure if they'll have Chris Harris back. But they've got the likes of Valrapava Ruskin, who's been absolutely flying for them. They're a good side this year. And I'm not quite sure how we're going to line up. Obviously, we had Prem Cup on Friday night as well. We ended up losing up there to Sale. You mentioned the likes of Tom Lorde coming back into the fold. That would be brilliant to see if he's going to be part of the matchday squad on Friday night. How do you see Friday panning out? Should we look a little bit at selection or do you want to just look at the wider points on the line?
Let's do selection, actually. Let's do selection because Jack Walker was back playing against the Barbarians. So he'll come back in at hooker, which I think is a good thing because line out hasn't been operating smoothly, let's say. So bringing him in, it's our established first choice front row, isn't it? With Marla, Walker and Wilco. Second row, God, I'd love to say Launchbury, but not yet. Next season. Ernie, who I love dearly more and more week on week.
Yeah.
I really like Ernie. He'll be in there. And I guess it'll be Hammond or Dino.
Hammond or Dino. Who are you going for? Hammond started against the Barbarians. Dino off the bench.
I think I'd go Dino on that basis. Not much between them, is there?
I think I'd go Dino as well. Again, you're absolutely right. There's not a great deal in it. I actually misspoke earlier. Gloucester did actually lose to Newcastle at King's Home last week.
Gloucester are actually going through a bit of a bad patch at the moment. They've lost a lot of their internationals throughout the autumn series, and we've actually lost more than just Marcus, of course, with Tommy playing for Italy and Andre getting a good run out against Italy for South Africa at the weekend, where it was a bit of a bulldozing centre combination. Speaking of bulldozers, go check out our Twitter thread if you've not seen it yet.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Andre Esterhazen is a bulldozer. Also taking requests for our next comparison. We've already had a great suggestion from Bears to do Caden Murley as different types of Harley Davidson. So that's on my to-do list. But yeah, those two are gone as well, so they won't be available this weekend.
I think I'd go with Dino, though. I think you're right. I'm looking at the Gloucester side over the last couple of weeks. Freddie Clark in the second row, and they've got a fairly big, heavy back line in Ludlow, Ackerman, Geordie Reed, Ben Morgan played last weekend as well. So there's quite a lot of meat in that sort of second row, back row. So I think I'd go with Dino just for a bit more physical presence next to Ernie.
Do you think? I'd say Hammond's more physical. I'd say Dino's a little bit more athletic around the pitch.
No, I don't know. I think Dino bit for me, I think. I'd go with Dino and Hammond off the bench and obviously the back row as normal with Dom Brandt at eight. And then I think...
So you go Kenner as well, Dom is.
Yeah.
It'd be good to see Lorde on the bench on that basis.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. So maybe that potentially
returned
means that
last week.
Yeah, maybe that will happen. And then the big question for me is what's going to happen with Andre? Is he going to be back from South Africa duty? He obviously started against, or started last weekend. Is he going to be involved against England at the weekend? If he isn't...
Oh, that would be good to see, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'd like that.
Is he going to be involved against
just
England
don't
at the
run
weekend?
At Marcus, please.
No.
Run at Farrell.
Yeah. Run.
But don't
run
let him hit you high again.
Run sort of directly between 12 and 13. Manu and Fennell. Don't run at
Marcus.
Don't run anywhere near
Although,
Marcus.
do you remember the story about him and Jamie Roberts with the man the fuck up challenge where he used to get Jamie Roberts just to run at him? I wonder if he's done that with Andre a few times in recent years. So maybe he's ready for it. But I agree with you. I would not plan for Andre at 12.
No,
just in case. You don't want to have disruptive preparation. So I would give Lennox a 12 shirt and just say, look, this is your shirt. Train like it's your shirt. Be ready to compete with Gloucester next week. He's gone well for us this season, Lennox. He's had the odd mistake in him, but that happens when you haven't played much rugby. So he'll come in. I think if Andre is available, I'd end up putting him in the 23 shirt.
Even if he's available?
Yeah, I'd have Andre 23. And keep. What? I'd just say Lennox, you're starting 12, mate. Train at 12. Play at 12. You're going to be playing with Will Edwards, who Andre wouldn't have trained with much at 10-12 combo. Not that it matters too much.
This is another question, though. So Italy haven't got a game this weekend. So does Tommy come back in?
Oh, have they not?
Italy aren't playing this weekend, no.
Are you sure?
100%. I'm looking at the fixtures, yeah.
Why are they not playing?
Don't know.
That's weird, isn't it? Tommy plays fullback then, doesn't he? Is Nick David back?
Don't know. Sure. I think one more game, I think, on suspension potentially, maybe two.
Well, there you go. There's your answer. Tommy Allen at fullback. Will Edwards at 10. Lennox at 12. Marchant, 13.
Is Northmore going to be fit? We will have Caden, I assume. If he's not going to play in the last three games, they're not going to pick him against South Africa and he'll be released.
You don't know with Eddie, though, do you?
Well, maybe not.
I think you're probably right. You don't know, but I think you're probably right. So let's assume we've got Caden and Bassett on the wings.
Yeah. Northmore probably not fit. So Lennox at 12, March at 13, Tommy
at
4.
It's a good lineup. Yeah. It's a good lineup, that. And then if we do get Andre, he comes from where's 23? I know that seems a bit crazy, but let's just focus on ourselves. Let's stick to what we know, what we've got guaranteed. Lennox is going to be here all week, training 9-10-12 with Danny, Will Edwards, Lennox. Just let him train and let him have a go on Friday night under the lights at the Stoop at home against Gloucester, who are sort of short of form, let's say, at the moment.
Yeah, they are short of form, having lost twice in the last 2 weeks.
And if it doesn't work, you've got Andre to come on.
I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to just... If Andre's available and he can play for us, he goes straight into 12 for me. But we've got a massive couple of weeks coming up. We've got Gloucester at home on Friday night. Then we're away at Bath Friday the 2nd of December, an away day that I loved last year, which I can't, unfortunately, do this year. And then we're into European time. The Sharks away in South Africa on the 10th of December. Wrestling at home on the Sunday the 18th, same day as the World Cup. Then we've got big game. Then we've got Northampton away on New Year's Day. And then speaking of away days, we have booked our tickets for Paris. So all we've got to do now is wait for Quinza to get the pub meet-up location fixed for where we're going to be. We'll book in some accommodation. The Eurostar's booked, the tickets are booked, and Paris is well and truly happening. If you haven't got your tickets yet, go and get them. Big game is also the fastest selling big game the club's ever had. 50,000 seats sold already. Go and get your tickets for that. And we've got a really, really exciting 6 weeks now of rugby coming up. We've got big game, European rugby, Premiership fixtures against Gloucester and Bath. It's going to be a brilliant few weeks coming up. I'm absolutely buzzing for it. And hopefully we can get some pretty cool stuff coming out of the podcast as well.
You missed the key detail there about rassing away. 500 tickets was our initial allocation.
Yeah.
We've already sold 1,000 tickets.
That went over the weekend, that first 500.
In the first weekend, that's the equivalent of London Irish away, all of us going to Paris. I think our maximum allocation is 1,500.
Yep.
So there's only 500 left. So if you haven't got them and you want to go to Paris, make sure you hit up Quinza and get your tickets booked. We've
and
got
probably less now as well.
And probably less now. We've got a section book like we did at London Irish as well. So it really will be one of the best away days you'll ever do in the sport. So make sure you sign up. I need to check whether it's possible to bring flares on the Eurostar or whether security is like airport security or not. If not, maybe we can order some on Amazon to the Airbnb we end up booking and make sure it's timed perfectly. I want to finish on a quick game because I've been doing this all week and I was surprised about how tough it is. So I have three questions for you. It's a game of height. And you've got to tell me who's taller. There's three questions. The first one is Danny Care or Caden Murley, who's taller?
Caden Murley.
Correct.
Not Danny by Care. Much, though.
No. Danny Care, 1.74 meters.
What's that Caden in height? What's that in feet? I don't know.
No, I don't know, mate. Caden Murley, 1.75 meters. So a centimeter taller. Question two. And the only reason I'm asking this one is because often I see Josh Bassett on the pitch and I actually confuse him with Andre. I don't know if you've done that yet or if anyone else has done that yet, but sometimes when he ventures into the midfield, I think, because he's got quite short shorts as well, like Andre does. Similar height, same color hair, similar stature. I get him confused. Anyway, who is taller, Andre or Josh Bassett?
Now, I've got a photo of me standing next to Andre and I'm 6'5". And I reckon I've got a couple of inches on Andre.
Not just in height, yeah.
Is Bassett taller? I'm going to go Bassett, just.
You're just incorrect. So Josh Bassett is 1.92 meters.
Okay.
Which is 6'3.5".
Yeah.
And Andre Esterhazy is 1.93 meters. Okay. So again, just a centimeter taller.
So I'm 198, so they must be around sort of 6'3.5", 6'3¾".
Yeah, that's correct, which I think is incredible. I didn't realise Josh Bassett was that tall. For a winger, 6'3½".
Rangy.
Last one. George Hammond or Steph Louise?
Steph.
You said that with confidence. You sure?
Only for standing next to Steph a few times. I'm not stood next to Hammond, but I reckon Steph.
So it was a trick question. They're both 1.98 meters.
Really?
Both 6'6". Which just surprised me because I didn't think Hammond was that tall. So or G Ham, as you call him.
G Ham. About a centimeter taller than me if they're both 6'6".
Yeah. Whereas obviously we had a few shots at the bar in Montpellier with Steph Louise and he's bloody tall. I didn't think George Hammond was that tall, but there you go. They're the same height. So yeah, that's where we'll leave you with a quiz. Over to you to wrap up the app.
Well, we've got a huge few weeks coming up. Go and get your tickets for Paris. Make sure you're there on Friday night. Go and get your big game tickets. And hopefully we can get some pretty cool stuff coming out of the podcast in the next 2-3 weeks. The busy winter period is on the way and I'm really, really, really looking forward to it. If you've got any info on what we can or can and can't get through immigration on the Eurostar, let us know so we can get flares in. And we'll see you all on Friday night back at the Stoop for some Prem Rugby. Nice one, mate. Looking forward to seeing everyone soon.
Come on the quiz.